Alrighty folks, and welcome to the Chronicler Podcast Channel, Episode 30, The Yellow Turban Rebellion. Now, if you listen to my quick updates that I posted just before this episode, you will have heard about my microphone problems and all of that, blah 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 blah. Not going to go into it again, but what I'm going to tell you about is the fact that I have made a website. So now, you can go to www.thechroniclerhistory.bookmark.com. Now I'll say it again, www.thechroniclerhistory.bookmark.com. And it is there where you will be able to look at the notes that I've taken for my show, and just be aware that it is only notes. Like, there will be times where it is a script, and then there's times where it's just me jotting down notes and then uploading them onto a blog. But it is there for you. And as well as that, you will also see that a Patreon page is available, and of course there is some merchandise that you can buy. But I am going to say I'm not particularly happy with the Patreon page or anything just yet, so if you felt like you wanted to donate, then it's weird, but I'm saying don't donate. Just because, like, you'll get nothing in return for donating. Like, I would just say, it would just be me saying, I appreciate your donation. And then that would be it. And I don't want it to be that way. I want to actually try and personalise everything as much as possible. So, don't donate if you felt like donating just yet, but I'm just letting you be aware that the website is there and you will see a Patreon page link there. And of course, you will see a website for merchandise. But again, I'm not particularly happy with the prices or anything. So it's weird. I'm saying don't buy the merch. Normally you have people saying buy my merch, but I'm just saying don't do it just yet. Anyway, on with the show. So, Yellow Turban Rebellion. This is the final nail in the coffin for the Eastern Han Dynasty. It is really what set the Three Kingdoms period into motion, and, you know, the Han Dynasty stopped after that. So, just to try and build up the atmosphere a little, I am going to take you back to the life of a peasant during the time just before the outbreak of the Yellow Turban Rebellion. So, here goes. The year is 183 AD. Since I was a child, all I have known is to farm and prepare for floods or famines accordingly. However, when I was a child, I remember my grandfather telling me about the greatness of the Han government, how in times of crisis the government would support us, they lower taxes, and of course the military conquests. Whereas now, things seem like they have been completely turned upside down and inside out. You were supposed to pay a regulated tax amount every year in grain, and that was it. But now, government troops and officials come more and more regularly, demanding more and more taxes. And for who? The Emperor and his armies for further conquests? Or to defend the Empire? No, it is for that disgusting half-man faction who advise the Emperor. Of course, I'm referring to the eunuchs. Imagine that, the Emperor is so blind to the corruption within his own court because the 10 attendants, or top 10 eunuchs, control everything whilst building up a nice wee fortune for themselves. the Yellow River has flooded again. And of course, back in the days of Grandad, the taxes would have been lowered to help us peasants to ride through the disaster. But of course, here we are, and on cue the tax collectors have arrived, demanding more taxes to help repair the damages. Yeah, right. More like repair one of the many estates of eunuchs or their friends. To make matters worse, my wife was injured in the flooding. How can I pay for a doctor? How can I help her? What am I going to do? That's when I heard of three healer brothers, or Da Yi. Their names are Zhang Jue, Zhang Lian, and Zhang Bao. They supposedly heal people for free. I heard they weren't far from here. I better get over there and see if they can help. After traveling a few days, I made it to the Jiangt. The rumours are true. They help people and don't charge anything. I still remember the conversation with Master Zhang Jue when I asked him if he would charge me. He said, "Why would I charge you when the government in Luoyang bleed you dry?" Those words shook me more than any storm or earthquake could. But just when I thought I couldn't be more impressed, the three brothers performed a chant and used some elixir which healed my wife's wounds. After much discussion, I found my views on the government and that of Master Zhang's aligned. And not even just the government, but our ways of life. He then told me, "The time of the Han will soon be at an end." I replied, "How do you know this?" He grinned at me and said, "Because I intend to take it down. Will you join me in my quest to follow Heaven's mandate, brother?" "Of course," I said, without hesitation. And with that, I had signed up to not just a rebellion, but a mass movement with hundreds of thousands of brothers. Soon, we will take down the Han, and the yellow sky will rise. So please note that I did fabricate this story based on the facts that I read. But this is how the rebellion got such a large following when it did kick off in 184 AD. The Han court at this stage was completely crippled by its own corruption. The emperor of the time, Emperor Lin Di, had relied on the eunuch faction within his court, and the eunuchs gave themselves more and more power. The ten attendants, or the Shi Chang Shi, were the most powerful of these eunuchs and abused their powers. They could release imperial edicts on behalf of the emperor, while simultaneously blocking any other proposals by other factions within the court. The eunuchs, and in essence the imperial court, didn't help the peasants in any way, and when natural disasters occurred, like the Yellow River flooding, or a famine, or a locust swarm sweeping through the land, the imperial court didn't do anything to relieve these people, but in fact made their burdens worse by taxing them further. Furthermore, rebellions had already broken out previous to the Yellow Turbans, and nothing had really been done about them. To make matters worse, rich landowners took advantage of people's hardships and basically enslaved tenants who couldn't pay rent. This extremely harsh way of life, with absolutely no escape, made people turn to banditry, or three Taoist doctors who toured around north of the Yellow River and treated people for free. These three brothers were, of course, Zhang Jue, Zhang Lian, and Zhang Bao. Apparently, on their travels, Zhang Jue found a sacred Taoist text in a cave and learned spells and healing powers. It was here that he prophesied the Han would soon end. As the brothers travelled the land, they gathered a following. As it was said, Zhang Jue was a magician who performed medical miracles, which included herbal elixirs and chants, as well as teaching people how to live by the right path, or Dao. What is surprising, though, is that two major sources of information that scholars go to get this information, the Houhan Shu, or Later Han Book, or the Book of the Later Han, that's what it's called, by the way, in English, or the Sanguo Zhi, with the records of the Three Kingdoms, don't have a biography of Zhang Jue and his brothers leading up to the rebellion. And for the most part, they don't focus on the Yellow Turban's activities during the rebellion. Rather the contrary, they focus on the generals who were sent out to pacify the regions where Yellow Turbans took over. The Yellow Turban's activities themselves barely get a mention, apart from such and such a general took over such and such a commandery by killing the leader there. But what we do know is this. The harsh lives of the peasants, the natural disasters and the corruption of the imperial court, combined with the preaching and teaching of the Zhang brothers, led the people to believe that the Han dynasty had lost the mandate of heaven. All of these events and lines of thought intertwined and set China onto a path of rebellion with much bloodshed. Zhang Jue had managed to infiltrate the imperial court with one of his trustees, a man named Ma Yuanyi, which again just highlights how corrupt the imperial court was. Ma Yuanyi actually managed to convince a couple of the eunuchs in the 10 attendants to join Zhang Jue's cause. All the plans were almost set in motion, and the date was set for the 3rd of April 184. However, the plans were leaked to the imperial government by a man named Tang Zhou, who felt he wasn't included in the plans enough. So in order to wreak revenge on the Zhang brothers, he then leaked them to the imperial court. Emperor Lin, completely taken aback by this plan to rebel, executed Ma Yuanyi by dismemberment. And then had thousands of his other co-conspirators in Luoyang rounded up and then executed. Now what about those eunuchs who were in on the treachery? They got nothing. They were allowed to keep their heads. When Zhang Jue caught wind of this, he started the rebellion immediately and proclaimed the Way of Great Peace at around February or March in 184. I find that ironic. He called it the Way of Great Peace, but called for a hell of a lot of violence to achieve that peace. But regardless, Zhang Jue was named the General of Heaven, or Tiangong Jianjun. Jian Lian was named the General of Earth, or Digong Jianjun. Jian Bao was named the General of Man, or Rengong Jianjun, which highlights the Taoist nature of the rebels. Heaven, earth and man are all interconnected, according to Taoist thinking. Hundreds of thousands heard the call to arms. Some report as many as 360,000 men, and not just men and women, joined the rebellion, and they wore yellow scarves around their heads, hence the name Huan Jin, or translated to English, Yellow Turbans, or what it should be correctly called, the Yellow Scarves Rebellion. I mean, come on. Turbans aren't even a Chinese item of clothing. But Yellow Turbans does seem to have a nicer ring to it, so maybe that's why they were called that. When Zhang Jue called the people to arms, sources mention that he said, Tang Tian Yi Si, Huang Tian Dang Li, Sui Zai Jia Zi, Tian Xia Da Ji. Translated to English, this says, the azure sky is already dead. The yellow sky will rise. When the year is Jiazi, there will be prosperity under heaven. Now I must admit, the Chinese version does sound more elegant than the English one, but I thought I'd better translate it. This declaration by Zhang Jue became the rebel slogan, and they would chant this, amongst other chants, before running into battle. The imperial government, like a few rebellions before it, didn't really do anything about the rebellion until it spread across the entire Han Empire. The Emperor and the Imperial Court simply didn't grasp the gravity of the situation, and it was clear that this rebellion was more than just a small revolt, but rather the contrary. The Zhang brothers begun the rebellion north of the Yellow River in Yu Province, which is modern-day Hunan Province. However, this wasn't the only place people heeded the call and took up arms. Rebels rose up in Yu Province, Jin Province, Ji Province, Shu Province, Yang Province, and even as far as Chengdu. The whole empire was engulfed in the flames of rebellion and the bloody war broke out. In order to deal with the rebels, Emperor Ling did two things. The first was that he allocated the tasks to local lords in their respective areas to defeat the rebels. The second was that he sent out officials from the imperial court like He Jin, Huang Fusong, and Lu Zhi to lead the imperial armies under direct command of the imperial court to crush the rebels. The former would come back to haunt the imperial court, as this allowed these lords to basically run their territory independently and to significantly weaken the central authority. But more on that later. At first, the lack of response from the imperial court and the sheer magnitude of the rebellion allowed the rebels to do well and take many commanderies within the provinces where they rebelled. However, once the Han juggernaut got going, it became a bit of a bloodbath. For example, the Jan brothers moved towards Zhulu Commandery in modern-day Hebei province, but were defeated by Lu Zhi and were besieged in Guangzhou County. It looked like the rebel leaders would be defeated there and then, but Lu Zhi was accused of treason by one of the eunuchs back in Luoyang, and he was escorted back to the capital as a prisoner. Now you might be wondering, why was he accused of treason? Well, it's kind of traditional in ancient China for this to happen. So if somebody was doing too well, somebody back in the capital would slander them and then say that they're doing too well to the emperor, and that then they're treated with suspicion. And then this is what happened with Lu Zhi. So he was taken back to the capital as a prisoner. His replacement was a man named Dong Zhuo, and Dong Zhuo made a mess of the entire operation, and he was actually defeated by Zhang Zhuo's rebel forces. So Dong Zhuo was then replaced by Huang Fusong, who didn't let the rebel forces breathe. He kept relentlessly attacking the rebel forces and gave them no time to rest whatsoever. But after a few days, the rebel leader Zhang Zhuo had died of illness, and it was his brother Zhang Lian who took over the rebel army, and under renewed leadership, the resistance became stronger. Huang Fusong, mindful that his failure would probably mean getting fired, or worse, executed, came up with a cunning plan. Huang Fusong pretended that he was setting up for a lengthy siege, so simply block the rebels out and starve them to death. In order to do this, he set up defensive positions. And the rebels, after seeing this, thought this was a good thing, because they had plenty of supplies, so they thought they could just wait it out. But this is what Huang Fusong was counting on. He wanted the rebels to let their guard down. And after a few days, under the cover of darkness, during the night, the Han forces rushed the commandery and unleashed their ferocity onto the enemy. The rebels, taken completely by surprise, were cut to pieces, including their leader, Zhang Lian, along with his brother Zhang Bao. 30,000 rebels were killed in the fighting, alongside another 50,000 who tried to flee by crossing the Yellow River and ended up drowning. After the battle was over, Huang Fusong found Zhang Jue's dead body, decapitated him, and then sent his head back to Luoyang. In the other provinces, some of the local warlords really shone in their performances in dealing with the rebels. Men such as Cao Cao, Sun Jian, Yuan Shu, Yuan Shao, Gong Sun San, and even a sandal weaver by the name of Liu Bei, who started his own militia to defeat the rebels with a butcher and a pea seller. But again, we will get to those guys later on. The initial rebellion only lasted 10 months. And the sources, such as Ho Han Shu, or later Han Book, state that not just thousands, but millions of people died in this rebellion. Now, please be mindful that it is very likely that those numbers are greatly exaggerated. For example, after one particular battle, Cao Cao said he killed over 1 million rebels. 1 million rebels in one place. It seems rather far-fetched. But why exaggerate the number in the first place then? Well, think about it. If Tao Tao did indeed kill 1 million rebels in a battle and reported it to the imperial court, that would win him great rewards. And who could prove him wrong? None of these dead rebels, that's for sure. Not to mention his subordinates. Why would they doubt their commander? After all, it bolstered their reputation as well if they did indeed defeat 1 million rebels. But what we can see from these figures, regardless of exaggeration, is the devastating effect on the population this rebellion had. With the leaders dead, you would think that the remnants of the Yellow Turbans would scatter to the hills and pray that they wouldn't be discovered from participating in the rebellion. However, that wasn't the case. Rebels kept sprouting up in the land 10 years after the initial rebellion. For example, in the year 188, 4 years after the rebellion initially took place, the White Wave Bandits took up arms in Sihul Commandery and allied themselves with the Xiongnu. Some 100,000 rebels participated and wreaked havoc across the land. However, when the new emperor, Emperor Xian, was fleeing from Chang'an after being relocated there by Dong Zhuo in 195, the White Wave Bandits actually escorted him safely to Luoyang. And from there, a large chunk of them joined Tao Tao's forces when he reacted first to save the emperor and relocate the imperial capital to Xuchang, which was Tao Tao's capital, funnily enough. Another group of rebels took up arms in Yan province in 192 and even killed the local governor. The remaining officials fled to, you guessed it, Tao Tao, and asked him to be the new ruler of Yan province. Tao Tao, for his part, was more than happy to oblige and led his forces against the rebels and crushed them. The rebels, numbering over 300,000, surrendered to Tao Tao with their families. Tao Tao then formed them into elite units known as the Qinzhou Bin, or in English, Qinzhou Army. It was these elite units that decided the fate of the north in later years when Tao Tao faced off against Yuan Shao. There were other Yellow Turban remnants as well. For example, in the 190s, Yellow Turban leaders He Yi, Huang Shao, and He Man all took up arms in Runan Commandery. It was once again Tao Tao who led his forces, defeated them, and then recruited them. There is one last Yellow Turban rebellion in the aftermath that I will speak of, just because I found a source of information which shows the devastating effects on the local population the rebellion had. So to start off, a little background info. After the Yellow Turban rebellion was crushed in 184, the flames of the rebellion weren't totally washed out, as I've mentioned previously. But in the Chengdu Plain, something almost entirely different happened. So to start, I'm going to quote the Han Ho Shu. At that time, the rebellious bandits of Yi province, Ma Xiang, Zhao Zhu, and others proclaimed themselves Yellow Turbans at Mianzhu and gathered a band of peasants exhausted from their labours in a day or two, obtaining several thousand men. First, they killed the prefect of Mianzhu, Li Sheng. Then they collected the clerks and commoners numbering over 10,000 men and went forth, defeating Luo district, attacking Yi province, killing Si Jian, finally reaching Shu and Qianwei commanderies. Within 2 weeks, they had defeated three commanderies and Ma Xian proclaimed himself Son of Heaven, and his band numbered 10,000. Now, from the quote, you can gather that this seemed more like an opportunistic bandit who disguised himself as a Yellow Turban and took advantage of the grumbling local population in the area that he was in, which is modern-day Sichuan province, or Chongqing, by the way. Now, with every war, when an army comes and besieges a city, or when it really comes to the nitty-gritty of things, it's the most vulnerable people who suffered the most. Those who don't have the money to flee cities before it is sieged, as well as non-combatants like women and children, are the ones who pay the true price of war. The story I want to tell you focuses on women and not children in this particular case. So three women by the names of Ni Yi, Ni Di, and Ni Hua were all widowed at an early age. Now, later dynasties, but not particularly the Han, would say that a woman was only allowed one marriage, and it would be seen as a bit of a disgrace to remarry after the early death of a husband. And they would use the story of Ni Yi, Ni Ji, and Ni Hua to emphasise this to women in their domains. But regardless, on with the story. The three women, after their husbands died, held to the propriety of a single marriage and carried out the chastity of the Gong Jian. By all accounts, the three women were extremely attractive, so it wasn't as if they couldn't find a new husband, they just chose not to find another one. Their oath to never wed a new husband earned them the name, the Three Chaste Ones, and upon hearing of the Yellow Turban Army bearing down on them in Ba Commandery, where they were located, the women fled to the walled city of Langzhong, and there the people of the city tried their best to hide the women, so as to stop their purity being disgraced, if you catch my drift. However, it soon became evident that the county would fall, and rather than being raped and butchered, the three women, Ni Li, Ni Ji, and Ni Hua, walked to the Han River, jumped in, and drowned to stop the rebels from getting to them. According to the Huayang Guozhu, a yellow bird cried out and flew back and forth where they drowned, and the author of the book, Chang Chu, even wrote a poem about it. He said, "Guan Guan," cried the yellow birds, gathered in the trees, calling comely the pure women, beautiful and virtuous. I think of their beauty and virtue, their hearts not stones. Alas, they approach the river, far away they cannot be had. From the poem, you can see the author does support the women's decision to drown themselves rather than being captured, and to be honest, I would agree with him. Now, the poem does romanticise the sacrifice of the women, but, and this is a big but, it does give us, the audience, an insight to the horrors of war, and it just shows how some things in war simply haven't changed. 2,000 years later, during World War II, think of the Rape of Nanking. God only knows how many women were raped in Nanking. And of course, when the Soviet armies were invading Germany, lots of German women made the same decision as those three women in the poem here. They chose to commit suicide rather than be captured by the Red Army alive because they knew what would happen to them. Now, I could talk more about this, but to be honest, I don't want to, I'm trying to make this more family friendly, so we'll move away from that. But just to let you know, I think, war is a horrible thing already, and unfortunately, this is just a horrible side effect of every war. Like, if you look back to any war in history, it's always women who are preyed upon in this way, and it's so tragic. But for now, let's just move on. So, when Ma Xiang had begun his rebellion, it does seem like it was far too easy for him to take over these commanderies. And it kind of was, due to the fact that the people of the region were extremely unhappy. Which again brings me to this. Can't you see history repeating itself? People are much more eager to join rebellions when the goings aren't good. In the Shu and Ba regions, there wasn't even any natural disasters or anything. It was just the government was so corrupt, which was a breeding ground for rebels to gather support for a violent uprising. The rebellion by Ma Xiang was, eventually crushed, by a local noble named Jialu, who then welcomed the new lord of Chengdu, a man named Liu Yan, to take up his post. But, for whatever reason, no source really indicates why, Jialong was rebelling against Liu Yan and then was defeated and executed. What a chaotic time to be alive. So, that's the Yellow Turban Rebellion for you. The rebellion itself might have failed because it was completely crushed by the Han forces, but it did succeed in ending the Han dynasty. So, kind of like half-measured success, I guess. But if you think all of the names and the poems and stuff that I shared with you was overwhelming, then let me tell you now, the Three Kingdoms period, which is next week's episode, is even more complicated than that. This is me trying to ease you in. Now, the Three Kingdoms period, without a doubt, is my favourite part of China's history. But I promise I will keep all of the nitty-gritty details to a minimum and just focus on the major events so that we can move on rather swiftly. Don't get me wrong, we will revisit parts of the Three Kingdoms as time progresses, but I do want to get past this period because it's rather complex and I don't want to spend so much time bogged down in it. But that is the end of the episode. Now, I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Chroniclers podcast, and thank you for listening. See you next time.